This episode is brought to you by Mint Mobile. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed you're used to, but for way less money. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for $15 a month. So while your friends are sweating over data overages and surprise charges, you'll be chilling, literally and financially. Say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans of Mint Mobile come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch the overpriced wireless and get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. Listen, I'm with one of the big wireless carriers, and it's time to ditch them because my bills are way too high, and it's time to move over to Mint Mobile. So this year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/curb. That's mintmobile.com/curb. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 per month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
The Curbsiders podcast is for entertainment, education, and information purposes only, and the topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any diseases or conditions. Furthermore, the views and statements expressed on this podcast are solely those of the hosts and should not be interpreted to reflect official policy or position of any entity aside from possibly Cash Like More Hospital and affiliate outreach programs, if indeed there are any. In fact, there are none. Pretty much, we are responsible if you screw up. You should always do your own homework and let us know when we're wrong.
Welcome back to the Curbsiders. This is one of our special USPSTF updates. I am joined by my co-host, Dr. Fatima Syed. Dr. Syed, how are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. We have new updated breast cancer screening recommendations, which is very exciting, has made the lay media. And we talked to Dr. Wanda Nicholson, who you'll hear about in just a second, about what the updates are, what drove those updates, what was some of the evidence behind them, and some of the inclusions, including things like health disparity, which was real evidence, which was a real emphasis in this particular update. So before we get to all of that, I'm going to remind you that we are the Internal Medicine Podcast, and we use expert interviews to bring clinical pearls and practice-changing knowledge. And Fatima, why don't I let you tell our audience about Dr. Nicholson and what we talked about?
Absolutely. So I'm going to try to do this as succinctly as possible, but this is a very accomplished guest that we have tonight. We've got Dr. Wanda Nicholson. She's an obstetrician gynecologist and chair of the U.S. Preventative Services Task Force. She's a senior associate dean for diversity, equity, and inclusion and professor of prevention and community health at the Milken Institute School of Public Health at the George Washington University in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. She is vice president of the board of directors of the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She's former editor in health equity, diversity, and inclusion for the American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She's past chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusive Excellence Work Group. And she's an immediate past member of the executive board of Guess Her Specialty, Obstetrics and Gynecology.
All right. And without further ado, let's hear from Dr. Nicholson. So Dr. Nicholson, Wanda, thank you so much for joining us and for coming on the show. This is obviously a topic that we've been very excited to talk about and will be impacting a lot of what we do as primary care doctors. Before we get into the updated USPSTF recommendations, we like to ask a couple of questions just to get our know our guests a little bit better. So to start with, could I just ask you to give us a one-liner to describe yourself? And if you're able to include a hobby or interest outside of medicine, we'd love to hear it.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you tonight, Paul. I am an obstetrician gynecologist and health services researcher at the George Washington University Schools of Public Health and Medical Center. And I believe that evidence-based medicine and preventive care helps to have better outcomes in all patients. And my hobby, I am a master of flower potting. And if you were to come to my front porch, you would see a rainbow of colors potted so well and growing beautifully.
That's amazing. This comes up on the show a lot, and we it's a running joke now that our most well-adjusted guests are all into gardening and planting flowers and that kind of stuff. This is the first year, and it was actually 2 weeks ago, I planted some stuff. So I actually put together a window box and tried to plant a tomato, and I'm trying not to kill things, which is usually what I do. So I'll report back. So it doesn't sound like I'm quite as advanced as you are.
This is actually a new skill for me. I actually harnessed this skill during COVID. when we were all sort of indoors. This was my outdoor activity. So, and I've maintained it over time. So now it's a routine for me.
Yeah, because I am the way that I am. Like, I did a ton of research before actually just planting like a tomato. Just far too much, probably too much intellectual work put into something that would have happened naturally if I just would have walked away. Fatima, do you have any questions for Wanda?
Can you share any advice you've received or given that might be helpful for our listeners?
Oh, helpful advice. Let's see. I think the one line of advice is when you're making a decision about whether to engage in an activity or not, ask yourself, if someone awoke me at 2 a.m., would I be happy that they awoke me to engage in this activity? And I actually used that advice initially to make my decision to go into obstetrics and gynecology. And I've continued to use it whenever I get an email asking me yet again to engage in an activity. I always ask myself, if it was 2 in the morning, would I be happy doing it? So that's my sage advice.
It's an appropriate response for an obstetrician.
Right. Who's probably often awake at 2 in the morning.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, I don't want to waste any more time. Not that this has been time wasted, but I do want to get to the topic at hand. So we just had a new update from the United States Preventive Services Task Force, the updated breast cancer screening guidelines. So that's the topic under discussion today. And as always, we're going to start with the case just as a framework to discuss the update. So I'm going to tell you about Samantha. She is a 43-year-old woman who comes to us with a history of anxiety and migraines. She's presenting for yearly follow-up. She doesn't really have much in the way of concerns or issues. She does share that her maternal grandmother had breast cancer at age 60, but she otherwise has no family history of cancer as we're sort of going through her screening stuff. And we see all the news and we're very excited for this new updated breast cancer screening guideline. So I'd like to start, as we always do, before we get into the meat of the guideline itself, if you could just sort of tell us in general, what prompts these guideline updates? And in this particular instance, why was it felt important to update the breast cancer screening guideline specifically?
Well, thanks for that question, Paul. I mean, first, let me say that screening for breast cancer is such an important topic in general and definitely for the task force. Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women, the second most common cause of cancer deaths. We know that there can be racial and ethnic differences in the incidence and deaths due to breast cancer. For example, we know that Black women, although they have a lower incidence of breast cancer, that they're 40% more likely to die from breast cancer compared to white women. And we also know that there have been increasing incidences of breast cancer, or increasing the incidence of breast cancer diagnoses in women in their 40s. In fact, between 2015 and 2019, there was an annual 2% increase in breast cancer incidence in women in their 40s. So certainly some concerning epidemiological trends. So certainly this is an important focus in general for preventive care and certainly rises to the occasion for the task force. In response to your other question about updates, in general, the task force updates all of our topics about every 5 years. So we were due for an update with breast cancer and really are pleased to bring forth this updated recommendation based on new evidence that we reviewed during this last update.
And has there been new evidence? I know, and I do want to ask sort of later on about some of the modeling that was done, but in the interval since the last update, have there been major new studies or new trials that have informed this update?
Yes, there have. So the key update in this recommendation is that we're recommending that all women begin screening for breast cancer with mammography at age 40 and continue every other year to age 74. And this is based on the latest evidence or science that we reviewed during this update. And there were really three lines of evidence. One was the epidemiological trends that I mentioned earlier, the fact that we looked at national data that showed a 2% annual increase in the incidence of breast cancers in women in their 40s. This was using national data. So that was a major influence on this updated recommendation. A second line of evidence was the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium data, which is sponsored and supported by the NCI. This gave us an opportunity to look at different trends longitudinally. For example, it also had additional data for Black women. And allowed us to look at practice patterns across the country. With this updated consortium data, we were able to use that data to input into our collaborative modeling. And I just want to say a few words about our collaborative modeling efforts, which are spearheaded by CISNET, which is the Cancer Intervention and Surveillance Network, again, supported by NCI. And I think that the real important take-home point from our modeling is that we had six different modeling studies at six different institutions under CISNET. They were able to input the updated data, which also included data on Black women from the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium. So this was really important to have this updated data since our last recommendation. And I think that the important take-home point for your listeners is that we look across all those models. And the important point here is that those models had similar outputs or had similar comparisons of benefits and harms when we looked at the modeling results. So we had that increases our certainty around the results and increases our certainty around being able to make recommendations based on the modeling when they have consistent and similar results. So this was really important as a third line of evidence for this updated recommendation statement. So looking at across those three lines of evidence, epidemiologic data, the surveillance consortium data, and the modeling, and looking at across that holistically landed us at this updated recommendation to begin at 40 and continue every other year until age 74.
I feel like this is probably a good time to just outline the rest of the recommendations sort of while we're on the subject. So you mentioned starting at age 40 to age 74, and this is biennial screening, right? So this is, we're talking every other year. And then I believe there were two more recommendations. Why don't we outline those while we're kind of talking about what updates have been made?
Well, I think this recommendation includes what we do know, which is what we just talked about in terms of beginning at age 40, and also what we don't know, what two areas that need more research and that we're really calling upon researchers to prioritize. One is among women who are 75 years of age and older. And in this particular population, there's very limited evidence. There was one national observational study that's of Medicare claims data that showed no improvement in screening, no difference in screening in this age group. When we looked at our collaborative modeling in this age group, we saw a small benefit. So there were conflicting results there and certainly a need for more evidence. So we're calling for that, and we list that in the research gaps or evidence gaps portion of our recommendation statement. The second important group that we're calling for more research in is those women with dense breasts. And we know that nearly half of women in the U.S. have dense breasts. And we know that when they're told they have dense breasts and that they may be at higher risk of breast cancer or that mammography may be slightly less effective in them, we know that creates a certain level of anxiety. This is certainly a high priority population for future research. Women with dense breasts are included in our recommendation. So if you're a woman who's 40 years, between 40 and 74, you have dense breasts, we do want you to have mammography starting at age 40 and continue every other year. The real question that remains is whether additional screening with MRI or ultrasound, whether this additional supplemental screening will help those women to live healthier lives. And that's the lingering research question that we need an answer to, and as quickly as possible, so we can help better advise this large population of women in the U.S.
No, I'm only laughing because I could not agree more, and also am sort of trying to reckon with, I think it's an updated FDA requirement to actually report breast density on mammography, but there's not a whole lot of guidance from really anywhere in terms of what to do with it. So these patients will say, I've got this report back that I says I have dense breasts and I could consider ultrasonography or MRI. And like, what do I do with that information? And it sounds like there's not a whole lot of evidence that's out there to guide that definitively so far that at least the task force has found.
Paul, you're correct. And I think that all of us see that quite regularly in our clinical practices, that we have patients who will undergo a mammogram and they're told that they have a negative mammogram, but there'll be that sentence in the bottom of the mammogram report saying that you have dense breasts or you have very dense breasts. And then women are alerted that they could be at higher risk for breast cancer. And I know that causes alarm and anxiety. And so for this particular population of women, we encourage them, have that face-to-face, one-to-one conversation with your primary care provider. Talk with them about your particular situation and what might be best for you in this interim time. But in this interim time, the task force is also, again, calling for more research in this area.
In terms of how often we expect to see this, because as with the recommendation to sort of move the screening to age 40, which is earlier than had previously been recommended, I have to imagine we'll be seeing more reports of dense breasts, which happen more in younger patients. Was that also sort of a consideration when going through the recommendation or sort of to the recommendation screen at a younger age or to sort of comment on breast density?
The breast density wasn't the primary reason for moving to age 40. In our prior recommendation, from 2016 did include women in their 40s. What we recommended back at that time was that women in their 40s could decide when to start screening, but to definitely start screening by age 50. For this updated recommendation, as I alluded to earlier, the epidemiological data showing the increasing annual increase, the annual increase in breast cancer incidence in women in their 40s by 2% was a leading influence on this updated recommendation. Those epidemiological trends certainly informed our recommendation statement. As well, the Breast Cancer Surveillance Consortium data, and especially our collaborative modeling, that again, when we looked at the balance of benefits and harms from the collaborative modeling, we saw a reduction in breast cancer deaths. And let me just be more specific about what we found. So if you look at it from this perspective, if you had a cohort of 1,000 women and those women started to obtain their mammography screening at age 40, we know that we could have 1.3 less deaths, or 1.3 deaths averted per 1,000 women. And actually, if you look among Black women, it'd be 1.8 deaths averted per 1,000 women. Now, you might think initially, well, at first glance, that doesn't seem like such a large number. But when you look at it from a population level, which is how the task force would view it, we're looking at saving up to nearly 25,000 more lives. So that's 25,000 more lives saved, 25,000 more women who are raising their kids and enjoying time with their families. So this change to start at age 40 is definitely substantial, could have a substantial public health impact on women over their lifetime.
For a practicing primary care physician, that is one or two patients in your patient panel if you're a full-time clinician. So that's huge.
It is huge and very impactful. And we've been very pleased to bring forth this recommendation. I will say that, again, this recommendation can be very impactful. There's still more research that needs to be done, more that we need to know, particularly in those groups of women 75 and older. And as we discussed, women with dense breasts as well.
So the benefit is clear. It seems like that would also potentially increase the risk of overdiagnosis as well. And I know the task force looked at that. Can you comment to that a little bit?
No, you're, again, totally correct, Paul. I mean, we have to look at both sides of the equation, as I often like to say. So whenever we look at screening, we have to look at the benefits of screening, which in this case is deaths that we can avoid in women. And we also have to look at the other side of the equation, which is the potential harms of screening, which can include multiple additional testing that may have to be done. It could include false positives, women being told that they may have a cancer when in fact they don't, and then they have to go undergo additional biopsies. And it can also lead to overdiagnosis, meaning that a cancer could be detected there that would not otherwise have affected the woman's quality of life or life expectancy. And in many cases, when you have those types of overdiagnosis cancers, in many cases, the individual will undergo treatments, and those treatments can sometimes be harmful or have harmful side effects. So definitely an important potential harm to think about in terms of screening. And we did compare the balance of benefits and harms through our collaborative modeling. But what we found is that by recommending that women start at age 40 and continue screening every other year to age 74, that we did increase the deaths averted without substantially increasing the number of harms. We also had an increase in life years gained. If you look at the number of overdiagnoses, that number only increased by about 2 per year. So that was an important potential harm to look at, but not a substantial harm. When you looked at the overall balance of benefits and harms starting at age 40 and continuing every other year is definitely a course and recommendation that we needed to make.
That is very helpful. That's good context. So let me recap the recommendations just so that I can say them explicitly. And you'll correct me if I misstate them, but we're the first and the big ticket one that will probably get the most press is that the USPSTF recommends biennial screening mammography for women aged 40 to 74 years of age. And that's a grade B recommendation, which is one of the ones that, so you do that. The second is that there's insufficient evidence to assess the balance of benefits of harms of screening mammography in women 75 years of age or older. So that's a grade I, which is just insufficient. So it's neither a for nor against recommendation, just we don't know for sure. And then lastly, the one where I think one of my questions was largely word salad, but the USPSTF concluded that the current evidence is insufficient to assess for the balance of benefits and harms of supplemental screening for breast cancer using ultrasonography or MRI in women who are identified to have dense breasts. And that's been identified as a area for research focus and hopefully quickly moving forward. So is that a fair summary of the the updated recommendations.
That is a fair and complete summary. Thank you.
Well, and I did this a little bit backwards. I should probably, so those are the recommendations, and I would like to give you a chance to tell us who these apply to specifically, because I don't think that we actually outlined that as concretely as we probably could have. So mm-hmm. who are these recommendations for, and along those lines, who do these not apply to necessarily?
Yeah, such an important question. So this recommendation applies to individuals who are assigned female at birth, who are between the ages of 40 and 74. This includes transgender men and non-binary individuals. This recommendation also includes individuals who may have had a family history of breast cancer, and it also includes women with dense breasts. So that's the population that it applies to. And it was so important as part of this breast cancer recommendation for us to be very attentive to inclusive language. We want to make sure that clinicians as well as patients recognize that they should recognize which patients should be referred for mammography screening. So this language was very important for this particular recommendation. And then the question of who does it not apply to? This recommendation doesn't apply to high-risk individuals. And I should actually back up and say, the population that we're targeting as part of this recommendation are average risk women. I should want to make sure I say that. It does not apply to high risk women, and that includes women who've already had a personal history of breast cancer, women who have a family history of perhaps a gene mutation, BRCA1 or BRCA2, that would put them at risk at breast cancer, and also individuals who have had perhaps had exposure to chest radiation in their younger age years due to other potential pediatric diagnoses. So those are the individuals that this recommendation does not apply to because they're in the high-risk category. And those individuals should have a one-to-one conversation with their clinicians about what type of screening intervals and other imaging that they should undergo given their high-risk categorization.
Great. So Wanda, it sounds like with the revised recommendation, having the screening starting at age 40 and proceeding through 74, that we're going to be capturing more disease and saving more lives. And that's obviously all the good stuff that goes along with that. I have to think with that change that we're also increasing the possibility for overdiagnosis. And I would love to hear how the task force considered that and what kind of modeling went into play and how that was balanced against the potential benefits.
No, great question, Paul. Whenever we're looking at a recommendation for screening, I'd always like to say that we need to look at both sides of the equation, the benefits of screening as well as the potential harms. And when we look at mammography screening, there is the potential of false positive screens that an individual may be told that they have a cancer when in fact they do not. That could lead to what could be an unnecessary biopsy. And also the potential for overdiagnosis, as you indicated. And that occurs when there may be a cancer that's found that would not have ultimately ever interfered or diminished the quality of life of the individual or affected their life expectancy. But once that's discovered, they can sometimes undergo additional treatments that may also have some harmful side effects. So certainly potential harms to look at. And we included these potential harms as part of our collaborative modeling. But in the end, when we looked at starting at age 40 and continuing every other year, and looked at the balance of benefits and harms, the benefits far outweigh these potential harms. So women should feel confident in this recommendation in proceeding with starting at age 40 and continuing every other year to age 74.
Can you talk a little bit about how the social determinants and diversity and equity piece informed these guidelines and what that process was like?
Well, with the task force, with all of our recommendations, we're always looking at the issues of disparities and how different conditions or disease conditions can affect different racial and ethnic groups and the potential impact of our recommendations in mitigating or reducing those disparities. When it comes to breast cancer, we are all faced with this persistent statistic that Black women are 40% more likely to die from breast cancer compared to their white counterparts. And as Paul indicated earlier, this occurs, we know now, despite the fact that when we look at self-reported data of mammography screening, that Black women are getting screened similarly to white women. So we know that there must be, you know, multiple other aspects of care and outcomes that are affecting this disparity. But for us as the task force, we focus on screening. So the question before us with this updated recommendation is whether or not Black women needed to have perhaps have a different screening strategy given this persistent mortality. And again, we were able to use our CISNET modeling to take a look at these possibilities. So we looked at several strategies that included all women, but we also had four SysNet modeling outputs that looked at Black women in terms of their screening strategies. So I think two take-home points from this. We found one that our general recommendation to start at 40 and continue every other year helped reduce breast cancer deaths overall and even more breast cancer deaths among Black women. So this current recommendation affects all women in a very positive way and even more so for Black women. We also looked at the possibility of whether Black women should be screened annually compared to every other year, given their disparate death rates. And what we found is that there may be a slightly higher benefit to screening annually in Black women. But on the flip side, there was substantially more potential exposure to harms. In fact, a 50% higher false positive rate if they screened annually. So the balance of benefits and harms for screening annually in Black women really was not going to be an effective strategy. So the take-home point for clinicians and for Black women is that, again, we're recommending that you start at age 40 and continue every other year to age 74.
Yeah, I thought the data around the biennial screening and the screening intervals in general was interesting. It sounds like there's not a whole lot of super powerful studies that kind of give us guidance regardless, but it seems, and this may, I'm sure this varies geographically, but I see annual screening happen far more often, I think, than I see biennial screening, but it does seem, at least the data that are in the data review, support the biennial in terms of mitigating potential harms and downsides to it. So I that particular piece of the evidence review I found super interesting.
Well, it's understandable that individuals may view that it's better to proceed with annual screening versus screening biannually or every other year. What I can say in terms of the task force and our evidence review, there's currently no randomized trials comparing every other year screening to annual screening. So there's no trial data available. When we looked at observational data, there was limited observational data, but what that suggested is that individuals who were screened every other year did not present with more advanced cancers or cancers with worse biomarkers than those that were screened every year annually. And then when we looked at our collaborative modeling study, certainly when we looked at the balance of benefits and harms, there was a more favorable balance of benefits versus harms in every other year or biannual screening compared to annual screening. So again, when we looked collectively across our evidence, we landed at every other year screening as part of this updated recommendation.
Yeah, it's wild to me that randomized control trial doesn't exist. I feel like I hear that, I'm shocked, and then it falls out of my brain, and then I hear it again, and I'm shocked all over again that it doesn't exist, and it's probably impossible to do now, but really, really interesting.
As part of our research gaps, and I know we'll probably get to that later on in the conversation, particularly for Black women, we are calling for research in this particular area. As I mentioned earlier, our collaborative modeling suggests that there are more harms than benefits in annual screening for Black women, but it would be important if there were available trial data in this particular population. So we call for that in our research gap section of the recommendation statement.
And I suppose while we're on the topic, any other research gaps that you'd like to talk about or sort of call out here so that we have any of our enterprising listeners can go and fix those research gaps? So I think we talked a little bit about the breast density evaluation and also the screening intervals. What else was identified as sort of a major research gap that should be identified sooner rather than later?
Well, first, let me just recap or highlight. You're correct, Paul. One, we do need more research in those individuals and women who are 75 years of age and older. We definitely need more research in whether supplemental screening with MRI or ultrasound is beneficial in women with dense breasts. That would be responsive to our 2I statements. And then the other portion of our research gaps really focus on this continued disparity in Black women. So we do need more research to look at why there are variations in care and the downstream follow-up steps once Black women screen positive, have a positive mammogram screening. So more research is needed to try to better understand that variation in care. One item that to bring up as well for Black women is that we know that not only do they have this disparate death rate, we also know that when they present with breast cancer in their 40s, they may also present with more aggressive cancers and cancers that have worse prognostic biomarkers. So we really do need more research to further investigate why do we see that disparity in the stage of cancers in Black women, as well as in those poor biomarkers. Is that due to social determinants of health or some combination of social determinants of health and environmental exposures? So certainly more research is due in that area as well.
All right, very helpful. And I suppose before we let you go, because you've been very generous with your time, it's always helpful to compare and contrast the USPSTF recommendations with other guidelines that exist. So can you sort of highlight the major differences between some of the other guidelines that our listeners may potentially be going by?
Well, first, I would say that I think that our guidelines, there's, I think, the different organizations with different guidelines, that we actually have more similarities actually than we have differences. Let me emphasize that to your listeners. I think that the task force, we do have a set of methodological processes that we go through in terms of reviewing the evidence, and that's what allows us to land at the recommendation that we're presenting and discussing, you know, today. So I would encourage our primary care clinicians to, again, recommend screening to start at 40 and continue every other year until 74. And for patients to really have those one-on-one conversations with their clinicians about the screening strategy that's best for them.
Okay. Fatima, any additional questions or insights before we let Dr. Nicholson go?
No, I think this is all so helpful. And it's also really nice to get an understanding of where the evidence comes from and also where research is needed. I really appreciate your discussion of both.
Well, thank you both for having me on to discuss the breast cancer screening recommendation, our updated recommendation for the task force. And it's been a pleasure to join you this evening.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of The Curbsiders, bringing you a little knowledge food for your brain hole. Where you say yummy.
Oh, yummy.
Oh, no. Things are falling apart. The wheels came off the bus. Get your show notes at thecurbsiders.com and sign up for our mailing list to get our weekly show notes in your inbox. Plus, twice each month, you'll get our Curbsiders Digest, which recaps the latest practice-changing articles, guidelines, and news in internal medicine.
We're committed to high-value practice-changing knowledge, and to do that, we need your feedback. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or email us at thecurbsiders@gmail.com.
A special thanks to our writer and producer for this episode, Dr. Fatima Syed, and to our whole team. The Curbsiders is produced and edited by our team at PodPaste. Elizabeth Proto runs our social media. Stuart Brigham composed our theme music, and Chris the Chu-Man-Chu moderates our Discord. Until next time, I've been Paul Nelson Williams.
As always, this has been Fatima Syed. Thank you and good night.